The media landscape in America is busted. Americans are on to the omissions, the half-truths, and the outright lies being propagated against we, the people. Your host, Tom Harris, will bring you the other side of the story.
The public is being deceived by the artificial intelligence behind Bing's Copilot online search tool when it comes to climate change. For example, try asking it, is CO2 rise the main cause of ocean warming? Copilot responded, quote, indeed, the rise in carbon dioxide is a primary driver of ocean warming. And then the AI goes on to list some factors that it says are reasons for this, including the following, quote, the IPCC, that's the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, emphasizes that human influence has been the primary driver, get that, the primary driver of the observed ocean heat increase since the 1970s. Note that it does not say that CO2 may be the driver. It's the primary driver, according to the AI's interpretation of the IPCC's conclusions. It apparently knows with certainty things that even the world's leading climate scientists don't know. Bing AI is a demonstration of the sort of confidence that we see from Al Gore and the IPCC all the time on this issue. According to them, our CO2 emissions are causing an ocean warming crisis. But does that make any sense? After all, the oceans hold 100 times more heat than the atmosphere. Thinking that the concentration of carbon dioxide, a trace gas in the atmosphere, drives changes in the ocean seems to make about as much sense as thinking that a flea on an elephant's back determines the elephant's path through the jungle. In reality, the elephant goes wherever it goes. The flea is just along for the ride. In today's episode, my new co-host Todd Royal and I will be speaking about this with our guest Joe Bastardi. Todd, can you introduce Joe to our listening audience, please?
Absolutely, Tom. Joe Bastardi, he is a Pennsylvania-based meteorologist. He's the chief forecaster of WeatherBell. He is also a local weatherman. He is paid to forecast weather by companies whose economic futures depend on it. Joe is author of the 2020 book, The Weaponization of Weather in the Phony Climate War, and the 2018 book, The Climate Chronicles, Inconvenient Revelations You Won't Hear from Al Gore and Others. He's an excellent public speaker whose presentations at the Heartland Institute climate conferences were particularly memorable. We will include a link to some of those talks as well as the two books I just mentioned on this podcast when he goes online on Monday. He has 47 years of experience in meteorology, and Joe Bastardi has no qualms about contesting the political correctness on climate change. He is also an amateur bodybuilder, having won the National Amateur Bodybuilders Association American Championships. So welcome to the show, Joe. Thank you for being on our program.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm trying to figure out how first of all, a lot of people don't understand that CO2 is not a heat-trapping gas. It can't possibly trap heat. Now, you can argue that water vapor certainly has some properties of that, because if you just look at a cloudy night, it doesn't get as cold as a clear night. So we know that. But CO2 is too tiny to trap gas or to trap heat in the atmosphere. And its back radiative properties only penetrate the top millimeter of the ocean. In other words, it uses what we call back radiation. That's a slang for the bands of CO2, which are saturated, then radiate back out. In fact, CO2 needs the oceans to warm to cause any warming, because the warmer the oceans are, the more outgoing long-wave radiation. CO2 does not absorb incoming radiation like the oceans do. So it's either the sun or the air, not specifically CO2's back radiative properties, but the air getting a little bit warmer. Or, as my brother, who's a geologist and climatologist, puts it, if you're going to warm the oceans, or if you're going to warm a pot of water, do you use a sun lamp, a blow dryer, or do you use a stove? So
yeah.
the most likely culprit in this is geothermal activity. And since we only have one data buoy for every 112,000 square miles in the oceans, and those only go down to a depth of 6,000 feet when the ocean's bottom average is 14,000 feet, the prime source of what this may be is being totally ignored, and rightfully so. When you got $63 trillion invested in climate change by these companies, And of course, that doesn't count with all what's going on with the social and political aspects and the move to the one world governance and all that nonsense. There's no way they're going to look at this, because it just blow the whole thing out of the water, literally. So we're in an interesting situation. Our society in general has dumbed down. I've lived next to a major university here, Penn State, and the kids it's indoctrination. And if you go and ask them, well, how is CO2 warming the atmosphere? They have no idea. They'll say, oh, it's trapping heat. That's not, someone tells you it's trapping heat, you can tell right off the bat they don't know what they're talking about. But they are so entrenched in their ignorance. Oswald Chambers once rightfully says, a fanatic is a zealot entrenched in ignorance. And that's exactly what we've got going on today with, you see these stop oil protesters and all these other people, and they are entrenched in an invincible shield of ignorance. And their entire life is based around this. See, I'm a Christian, so my life is based around God and trying to do what God made me to do. If your life is to save the planet, then anybody that stands up against you is that's why Michael Mann thinks that people are threatening his life. In a way, when you think about it, and this is some kind of narcissistic sickness that is developed in our society today, and I think it has to do with the victim mentality, in that people want to, I'm a victim, I've got to pull myself up, I've got to do something great, right, mm-hmm. to worship myself. I think there's a lot more behind this than just science and, money and all this other stuff. But, my worldview is not held by a lot of people.
Yeah,
that's interesting, because when I was at the Copenhagen Climate Conference, there were all sorts of people protesting capitalism. So, I mean, it seems to me that you're right. There's a lot of underlying drivers. And I was going to ask you about that later in the interview. But what do you think are the drivers?
Well, they don't want to compete. These people have been handed everything. They want the benefits without the risks. And that's what's going on today. And they deflect. Look, let me tell you something. I wrestled, bodybuild, bunch of stuff. I compete all. I can't get the competitive gene out of me. You know why? I want to know where I stand. Same thing with forecasts. I had a colder winter forecast this year. It just blew up in my face out of nowhere, where the water suddenly warmed 2 to 3 degrees Celsius around Australia, most likely because that big volcano that went off a couple of years ago is probably still bubbling away underneath, but no one really knows what's going on there. But for whatever the reason, but I have to confront that. You understand that? And there's a basic difference between a climate researcher doesn't have to confront anything. When was the last time, I don't want to pick on Michael Mann too much, but when was the last time Michael Mann made a forecast? You know what he's going to do? He's going to come out with a big hurricane forecast, and I'm going to say, hey, we issued that December 7th, Weather Bell. We've got this hurricane season from hell forecasted this year. Because my climate hypothesis said that the El Nino can't last. It would collapse very quickly. And the Atlantic Basin would stay relatively warm because it doesn't have the same kind of sloshing going on that we find in the Indo-Pacific due to all this. And so what would happen is that we are just setting ourselves up for what will be a political football this year with hurricanes hitting the United States. So anyway.
I just want to know, how did you first get interested in meteorology?
I was born to do this. From my first memory, I loved the weather. My dad is a meteorologist. His grandfather had a fascination with the weather. His great-grandfather in Bisignano in southern Italy was a town weatherman. My son loves it. It's in the blood. A lot of the meteorologists today are on TV I'd like to be on TV. That'd be pretty cool. That has nothing to do with any TV appearances I've made. I love the weather, and that's all it's doing. It's like chariots of fire. Remember, Pastor Eric Little said, "God made me fast. I feel His pleasure when I run." Well, God made me to do the weather, and I see the majesty of His hand in creation every day. So it's like there's sort of a bigger link there. I don't think I'm like a lot of other meteorologists in that. I think that the challenge of the atmosphere and the humility that you're taught by the weather is a spiritual lesson. you know, and I never pray for the weather to do what I ask it, you know, whatever I'm forecasting. I pray for the wisdom to see God's hand when I'm wrong. I believe the good Lord above is teaching me something bigger. When I'm right, I believe it's to give glory to God. And that's all that's to it. And so that's about as popular as an outbreak of COVID, that attitude. Because so, you know, I had a wise old Catholic priest once explain to me the link between science and God. God is the search for who, science is the search for why. If you have an open heart and you're focused on God, when you find God, it explains the why. When you see the why, it points back at God. And so what you have here, generally in the scientific community, with a lot of people being atheists and non-believers, is that they want to elevate themselves to God by the increase of their knowledge. And that's why you see such, it's really good to be focused. It is good to be focused. But if you're focused in the wrong direction, or you're focused simply to try to continue to elevate yourself, that's a very different thing. Even in guys on my side of the issue, they all have their little fiefdoms. And you see, the difference between me and everybody else in this is I really don't give a darn what's warming the planet. I have to deal with the ramifications of people who are trying to use that for whatever nefarious ideas that they have. But let's say the entire climate fight went away tomorrow. All right. Well, first of all, that would blow the whole World Economic Forum out of the water. Secondly, there would be a lot of, we wouldn't be having this podcast. You guys, what would you be doing? This podcast is about climate change, right? But I'd be working the same way I work every day. You understand that? So I really don't give a darn. It could be Louis Farrakhan up there in the mothership throwing a magic bust or whatever.
Yeah.
A bust on you? I'm just saying it doesn't matter. But on the other hand, despite my Christianity, I'm going to use a Clint Eastwood saying in one of his spaghetti westerns, don't pee down my back and tell me it's raining, because that's exactly what these people are doing.
Do you find, obviously, you said you really began in meteorology, your family, and certainly climate change or global warming, whatever you want to call it, has turned into a religion. Not a religion of the Bible or God. Do you think that meteorology, though, so you had this interest in meteorology, did that quickly have to move into climate change, or do you feel like you were forced to have to deal with it?
Because look, all climate is a series of weather events over an extended period of time. You know, you have a 30-year climate average or a 3,000-year climate average, so weather patterns repeat themselves. It's why Michael Mann, by the way, the one thing the Steinchild did was completely expose Michael Mann, and not that he's a fraud, but what Michael Mann basically did was he took 2 out of 22 possible options and then jumped all over them. I don't know if you see what he did. The other thing is, because he doesn't forecast the weather, he literally is claiming the medieval warm period. That is an impossibility. You can't just have one part of the planet warm and there's not compensating warmth in other areas. And as a matter of fact, the areas where he's looking at his Griffith pine cones would actually be colder if the planet's warmer. See, a lot of times, you know, these pockets of cold still remain. And a lot of times you'll see, for instance, the polar Urals. When Europe's warm, the United States is usually warm. Polar Urals are cold. The Western U.S. are cold. And then the reason, you know, he doesn't let anybody look at his data is because a guy like me could come in and pick it apart. Say, well, why are you dwelling on these pine cones over here? But what about the other pine cones over here? Right.
Yeah.
So that's why paleoclimatology is, it's not voodoo. It is a representation of what could have happened, but it's not what had to happen. And it's certainly challenged by simply looking at the weather today. It's the same thing with the Bidens. You know, let's say, let's just say everything the Bidens did was on the up and up. They're still, what are they, Benedict Biden or Judas Joe? If they're telling you, listen, and I'm going to try to get this out there. I want to get this to Trump or who's ever going to run. If, You're telling me that this is the greatest existential threat ever to the world. What are you
worse
doing?
Than nuclear war.
Okay, what are you doing business with companies, fossil fuel giants, that have the exact opposite goal of what you're doing? You're strengthening them while weakening your own country's fossil fuel industry. What do you call that? What do you call it? You sold out your country for 30 million, whatever they claim, the $30 million. But here's the thing. Our media doesn't even stop and think about that. So, okay, well, what was he doing working with these oil and gas giants? I thought that the Bidens were all, you know, Al Gore and all this other stuff. And their hypocrisy stinks to high heaven, the whole bunch of them. And so it's a matter of control. Look, folks, if you can control another man, all right, then you can do whatever you want. And so you're seeing that happen. And I think that's what the real big thing is. It's an affront to God gave us all free will. And another man shouldn't be influencing your free will. You know, people say the eagle is a symbol of American pride. The American dream and all that. No, it's not. It's a car. Fact is, you could get a car. It take me a minute and a half to get 400 miles of energy into my car so I could go drive to Columbus and get blown off the stage in that darn old classic, which I guess you guys will talk to me about. The fact of the matter is, I can't do that with an EV.
You know, Joe, you talk about the weaponization of weather and the phony climate war. That's your 2020 book. So is this what you're talking about? Weaponization, using it to control people?
Yeah, well, it's across the board. I mean, of course, yeah. There's two ideas on how to grow things. There's one is top down and the other is bottom up. Bottom up is a spiritual way to grow things because man is always reaching toward God. A seed is always reaching toward the sun, toward the light. Okay. So, but it's individual. It's based on individual. The rise of the individual leads to the rise of those around them. In other words, let's say if you have a competitive situation, this is what we were taught in wrestling at Penn State when I was here. If you're competitive and you're free to compete and you're free to learn whatever moves and whatever holds and get into whatever shape you want, then you are going to get better. If you're the guy in your weight class wants to get better, he keeps up with you, pretty soon the entire team is elevated by that. All right. But then when you take away hope and you take away vision from people, and there's only, you know, you have a certain stratified layer that you can rise in. All right. Because someone up above you is telling you, no, you can't do that. Think about the difference between God in control and man in control. God gives everyone free will and says, you can do this. Men say, no, you can't do this. All right. So, and the huge threat of the individual socialism is socialism and communism preaches we all have to do this together. In the meantime, our society says, no, the individual can do it. And so that looks really bad. All right. You know, Obama once famously say, you didn't build that. Right. They're just taking away the credit. And yet the road that he was referencing to, the only reason the road was made necessary was because of the commerce that people had developed, and they needed that road to go from one city to another. So who did build the road, right? Oh, the government stepped in and built it. Well, they did it out of necessity. Why'd they do that out of necessity? Because the people got it going, right? So all this is meant to stop this. These people think the world's spinning out of control, and they think that they can stop it. There's 8 billion people on the planet now. And by the way, it's very interesting. You know, they talk about how bad things are getting in climate deaths. We average 7.5 deaths per, what is it? 7.5 deaths per thousand people today on the planet. And I believe in 2000, it was 20. It was 20 per thousand died every year. So
from extreme weather and climate,
just in anything, okay. Just say man is progressing. The great Alex Epstein, his book, The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels. You don't even need the weather argument. Just look at the moral and ethical aspects of it. And maybe there's some kind of, suicide pact that these people have developed. I just want no part of it. So, so anyway.
Do you think, Joe, because, you know, we hear all the time about this extreme weather and that piece of extreme weather, and you're talking to us, you know, we're going from El Nino to La Nina. That's rapidly taking place. You've studied extreme weather for decades now. Do you agree or disagree with the claim that the weather is now more severe than at any time in recorded history?
There are aspects of the weather that have changed. For instance, in close development to the United States of smaller, more compact storms is on the increase because we're in a, what we call a La Nina-based state of the planet, okay, which favors the Madden-Julian Oscillation phases two and three. All the major in-close hurricanes that have developed within 2 days develop in phase two of the Madden-Julian Oscillation. That's called the La Nina-based state in the summertime. In the wintertime, the La Nina-based state is phase four, five, and six of the MJO, and it leads to it naturally being warmer. This is so obvious. I think I sent the PowerPoint to Tom. Even the guys that are saying, well, there's less cloudiness. Well, less cloudiness is being caused by the distortion of the warming. There's more warming away from the equatorial areas. What that does is that disturbs what we call the Hadley cell, that upward motion that is over the tropical oceans. If there's nets sinking over the tropical oceans, what happens is there's less cloudiness. What happens when there's less cloudiness is more incoming solar radiation to try to heat the ocean up. But the cause of it is not a back radiation of a trace gas in the atmosphere that can only penetrate a millimeter or two of the ocean. And this whole thing is just the more I study it, listen, the CO2 idea, it's beautiful as long as you eliminate every other possibility. As long as you, so it's like, you know, if she's the only girl in the prom you could dance with, then she's the best looking girl at the prom. So,
So yeah, actually that brings up this issue about CO2 being supposedly the main greenhouse gas driving the climate. But that's not true, is it? I mean, isn't it water vapor?
it's water vapor. It's a combination of the whole thing, but water vapor, you can correlate the rise in the temperature. Why do you think they don't want to try to quantify water vapor? You ever notice we quantify CO2, we don't quantify water vapor? Why are we using water? Because it will show you exactly what the temperature's doing. If you look at saturation mixing ratios, which should be the number one climate metric, that's grams per kilogram of water vapor in the air, you can see a direct correlation between water vapor and temperatures. We have no such thing as CO2. So how can CO2 even be a consideration? For instance, the increase of 1/10 a gram of water vapor per kilogram at minus 40 correlates to a 10 degree temperature rise. You need 90 times that to produce that rise around the equator. Why do you think the Arctic warms up only in the winter? Right?
Yeah, dry and cold.
So what is that doing to the entire global pattern? And it's so obvious. I would estimate that the increase of water vapor since the geothermal input began in the late 1980s, probably a half gram, all over the globe, which would correlate to about maybe 7/10 Fahrenheit increase in temperature, may or half degree Fahrenheit increase in temperature, which is exactly what the temperature has done globally over the last 30 years. But the simplicity of it, and see. I don't even know what to say. It's Occam's razor and Le Chatelier's principle, which says if CO2 is doing all this, the introduction of CO2 into the system at the beginning of the fossil fuel era should have sent this thing off the rails, and then it levels off. That is a basic common principle. Now, they simply defy the whole thing, and it is amazing watching this go on. It absolutely is amazing that these guys want to be so smart, make things so complex, right? And so if it's ever discovered that a dummy could actually figure this stuff out, if he was actually smart, it would blow the whole thing out of the water. We're in bad shape, guys. I'm not in bad shape. I've lived in the golden age of mankind, in my opinion. You know, you get idiots. Lord forgive me for saying that. You get people. I mean, the AIs that have no idea what they're doing as far as what an opposite idea would encounter. So they just stack it, and all they're going to do is stack it with their own algorithms and everything else. So it's basically a brainwashed society. They're completing the destruction of man's upward mobility with these kind of things. You just brought that up, okay? Let's say I programmed an AI and stuck in all Dr. Arthur Vitorito's data on the increase in geothermal spreading. The AI would come up with no other answer except, well, it's geothermal spreading that's causing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'd like to actually get onto that issue after the break, the geothermal being the source of global warming, that theory. So, well, Joe,
it's the totality of the system, including, you can't just rule CO2 out, but it's the total picture. It's the total picture that does the thing. So it's like, okay, if you want to get big lifting, you got to do squats, not leg extensions. All right. You got to work heavy weights, not go over there and Nautilus 3 days a week. You ever see what a person that does can a person that does Nautilus get up on a bodybuilding stage? See what I'm saying? So what you have is you have this, and it's been going on for years. We're going to sell you an easier way. I don't care if it's steroids, Nautilus, whatever, to do this. We're going to sell you an easier way in climate to get the answer, but you can't get away from the big natural movements. You in bodybuilding, you can't get away from the big natural forces in climate. That is what nature does. And it's amazing to watch all this. And like I said before, it has to do with the victim mentality and this idea that people want to elevate self. And, they've got to come up with some kind of, they come up with some kind of goal, and everybody has to participate, because God forbid if you succeed and you weren't doing what I was doing, that threatens my whole life vision and all this other stuff that goes on.
You know, I want to get onto that after the break. We have to go now, so stay tuned. We'll be right back with Joe Bastardi and my co-host Todd Royal. We're going to talk about this other idea that geothermal factors such as volcanoes may be the main factor driving global warming. So stay tuned right after the break.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The buildup of spike proteins is dangerous to your health. Global Healing's Foreign Protein Cleanse detoxes your body, removing the spike proteins, allowing your body to repair from within. Formulated by Dr. Edward Group and by Dr. Brian Artis, Foreign Protein Cleanse targets and detoxes spike proteins in the body. Go to americaoutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to americaoutloud.shop. That's americaoutloud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created heart and vascular health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud for 25% off.
Well, the year 2024 must be the year of the Patriot, and AmericaOutloud.news will equip you with all the information you need to give new meaning to the words Patriot Act. for our actions always ultimately define our wounds. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
So we're back with meteorologist Joe Bastardi. Todd, you had an interesting question leading on from what Joe was just saying.
I did. You know, Joe, you talked about the totality of factors, and I thought it was great how you put it. You didn't say CO2 wasn't, but you go, it's not everything. And explain to me what you mean by the totality, all the factors or variables that are going to affect climate.
Well, it's the sun, the ocean, stochastic events, and the very design of the system. My father taught me from when I was a kid that weather and climate are nature's way of trying to find a balance she can't have because of due to the design of the system, the way the planet is set up. And life is made for conflict. Conflict needs resolution. Resolution needs adaptation and advancement. And so that's the way the weather works, too. And it's not that hard to figure out that, the sun is sort of the grand conductor of the entire orchestra, but CO2 may be a flute player over on the side somewhere, but still part of the orchestra. So I don't think it's brain surgery to figure that stuff out. If you took all the CO2 out of the atmosphere, what would happen? All the plants would die. We know that, right? But would it change the temperature? Would it change the weather? Not really that much. Let's say you suddenly took the sun away. There's no sun. In 3 days, you're gone. Which is the bigger influence? I mean, you've got to use, okay, let's say we change the design of the system. Let's say the planet no longer rotates around the sun and no longer rotates every day, right? So which is the bigger force? And what happens is they try to come into balance, but there's always, always, always going to be variations of that balance. And those variations of that balance is what causes the back and forth that we see. It's natural, and there's nothing that mysterious about it. It's not rocket science. And that's the problem. These people want it to be rocket science. I guess at a micro level, it is. I mean, it gets very, very complex in some things. But the overall drivers of the weather have been and always will be the big, big forcings that are taking place.
Yeah, not this tiny little flea on the elephant's back. I mean, that's the point I got out of some of your previous presentations, is CO2 is a consequence of climate change, isn't it? It's a consequence of weather and temperature change.
It's obviously part of the equation. By that I mean, because if the ocean's warm, there's more CO2 into the air. The ocean's warm, if the ocean's warm, there's more outgoing long-wave radiation too, right?
Yeah.
So if the oceans were at the same temperature as we were in 1989, you could have put all the CO2 in the air you want. There'd probably be less than a tenth of a degree of difference. People can't explain that. They won't explain that. They don't want to explain that because it will definitely lead to the destruction of their preconceived notions.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're saying that carbon dioxide is far less influential than water vapor, and water vapor obviously increases with a warmer ocean. So the question then is, what is causing the oceans to warm, in your opinion?
Let's put it this way. I didn't go looking for this. I kept saying, how are these hot spots that go off cause regional weather events that then in turn affect the global weather pattern? And I just get sick and tired of them seeing it showing up out of nowhere. Where the heck did this come from? Why did that go off there? And Dr. Wu Xiem over at Hong Kong, he came out with his ideas on regionalized ocean heat waves, and it made perfect sense. I said, okay, because every time I see here's what happens. It's like a boxer. Every time he takes a blow, all right, it leaves a residual effect. Enough body blows, guess what's going to happen? The box is going to go down. Well, every time the ocean warms in a certain place, all right, it may then cool, but it leaves the overall input to the ocean warmer. So where's that energy coming from? And, you know, you get guys, you know, as much as I love the CO2 coalition and some of those guys, they just totally dismiss it. It's like, oh, yeah, it's a Bunsen burner at the bottom of the swimming pool. Well, we got 10 million Bunsen burners going off at once in the form of these hydrothermal vents, right? And we don't know what the heck they're doing. We have no idea. And we can't tell until 2 or 3 months after the fact. So when you see a sun warming, like, for instance, what we just saw off Australia in January, it warmed 3 degrees C in 1 month. Where the heck did that come from, right? Yeah. Well, are you kidding me? Well, where did it come from? Well, we're going to find out where it came from. It looks like, again, Dr. Vitorito sent me, said, yeah, there was a burst of activity extending from off South America, west northwestward, right to off Australia. And boom, the water warmed up. Meantime, what did that warming do? When waters warm around Australia, you can forget the United States winter. It's all over, right?
When you say but the water's warm, how did the waters warm? Is it underground volcanic activity?
It appears it was geothermal. Okay. It has to be, you know why? Because the El Nino analog is for cold water there. I've never seen anything like this. When the El Nino goes off in the Central Pacific, the water is usually cold from northern Australia. And that's why there was no detection of the El Nino with the Southern Oscillation Index this year. In other words, if we didn't have all the what we call Oceanic Nino Index, all right, the way they started measuring it from 1950 on. If you were measuring this event from 1850 to 1950, there was no El Nino this year. The way the Australians measure it, right? So what does that tell you? It tells you something funky's going on, doesn't it? And that can't be produced by CO2.
Yeah.
I mean, it's laughable. But, of course, you're going to get people that will argue that it is.
Yeah, so it's ocean underwater volcanoes and other geothermal things that are warming the oceans, which produce more water vapor, which is, of course, a greenhouse gas.
I am not God. That is the hypothesis. The only way to test the hypothesis is if we see the because let's remember, the warmer it gets, the harder it is to make it warmer. So if we see a leveling off, the oceans will stop warming. If we see it go down, it could cut. Let's say there was a sun drop back to where we were in 1985 in geothermal activity. The oceans would cool very quickly. In fact, something funky is going on, because models are really forecasting the greatest temperature drop in the Indo-Pacific we've ever seen. Those data boys, they're starting to detect cooling going on at about 6,000 feet underneath the surface of the water, then maybe they're starting to see something. But we don't have the geothermal data. We can't tell. And it's almost like it's by design, because it would answer the whole thing.
Yeah, that actually raises an interesting question, namely, with such little data on the actual state of the oceans, as you say, one buoy per 100,000 square kilometers or something, do we really know what the so-called average global temperature in the oceans is?
No, we really don't know. But the thing is this, when someone says, you have no peer review to prove your point, well, you don't have peer review to prove that I'm wrong. You don't. You've got nothing. Right. And all you're doing is you've got a one sided blind observation system that says no matter what, it's CO2, as opposed to someone that's actually curious about it, understands that water vapor is the main driving force in the weather. Right. We have, for instance, let's say you get an air mass with a 60 degree dew point. OK. And it's coming into an air mass with a 10 degree dew point, and the 10 degree dew point is not going to move. You know what you're going to get? 2 feet of snow. Right. You're going to get a blizzard, all right? Because all that buoyant air from 60 degree wet bulbs is going to go straight up as soon as the cold dense air is there, right? So what happens is these are things that influence the weather. Weather influences the climate. Now, we have 475 parts per million of CO2 coming into an area with 275 parts per million CO2. Nothing's going to happen. It doesn't make a difference. Right.
Yeah.
So when you think about it on that scale, you say, what the heck are you trying to pull over here?
Yes. So I had a two-part question. So the geothermal activity is increasing over the last few decades, I understand. And if that's true, what's causing it?
Well, we believe if you look at the exothermal layer, the core of the Earth is reversing. All right. The molten core is reversing. That should be putting stresses on the bottom of the ocean. So every time these cycles go off, what's causing that? If you start talking to Moncton and some of these other guys, it may be the alignment of the sun with Jupiter, and this is way beyond my pay grade, because eventually it has to do with gravitational pulls and changes in stresses on the Earth that cause that kind of thing. But the exothermal, and there's a lot of literature out there about that this has been going on since about 1980. And what happens is the accumulative buildup of heat in the ocean, boom, you have to get a Super Nino to balance it off. A Super Nino, a ton of water vapor in the air, boom, up goes the temperature.
We better define this El Nino, because I don't think a lot of people know what it really is.
Well, it's a warming of the Pacific between approximately the date line to the Pacific coast. The water is very warm there no matter what. And when you're looking at the amount of water vapor available at, let's say, 83, 84 degrees, right? Mm-hmm. If you increase it to 85, 86 degrees, that is an immense change in the amount of water vapor put into the air. And once it spreads out all over the place, you see the warming that goes on. More in the coldest, driest areas. And the El Nino, you can't sustain an El Nino anymore because we're in a La Nina base state. Why are we in a La Nina base state? Because the ring of fire has been hyperactive over the last 30 years with the input of energy into the Western Pacific. And that in turn has warmed the Western Pacific, warms Asia, warms India, warms Africa, right? So you create this giant area of warmth that is over there in the Eastern Hemisphere. That in turn increases the easterlies across the Pacific, right? These guys are bringing up, how come it's getting colder off South America? Duh, when you're in a La Nina base state, that is what's going to happen. So since the Super Nino of 97, 98, if we use the multivariate ENSO index, which tells us what the atmosphere is doing in reaction to the El Nino, we can't sustain the El Ninos. They just disappear. All right.
Look at this. Yeah, because that's what you see, eh? In the temperature rise, you see these plateaus where it jumps due to an El Nino.
You know, it's perfectly obvious what's going on. All right.
Yeah. So let's see if I can summarize. You have this ring of fire, which I understand is volcanoes under the ocean, right?
You have the mid-Atlantic. Same thing's going on in the middle part of the Atlantic. And the thermohaline circulation is naturally going to try to put warm water. Because look at the way the continents are shaped, right? Mm-hmm. There's more land in the northern hemisphere than there is in the southern hemisphere. The continents are mostly north of the equator. So where is the warm water going to try to circulate? The equator is the equator, but the temperature and atmospheric circulation equator is more like a 10 or 12 north, right?
Oh, okay.
Why is that? Because of all the other stuff that's going on. That's why the intertropical convergence zone, which has been disappearing because the Hadley cell is being destroyed, all right, was at 8, 9, 10 degrees north, right, as opposed to right over the equator. See, folks, that you got to understand, the system is not designed to be, hey, it's 75 today. It's going to rain from 3 to 6 in the morning on my zinnias. And then at 9 o'clock, the sun's going to come out. We all walk around and play with the unicorns. That is not the way the system was designed. And it was designed that way for a reason, because if everything is easy in life, you just sit around. If I have big calves, you know what I do? I drink beer and eat bonbons all day. If I have more hair, I do the same thing.
So this is the theory. We have the volcanoes, generally speaking, and thermal input to the oceans coming from the geothermal sources. It warms
really
the oceans.
Don't know what the heck is going on down there.
Yeah, and it produces more water vapor. Now, if water vapor is the prime...
It produces more water vapor because it warms the oceans. The oceans put more water vapor into the air.
Right. Now, the reason we know that the greenhouse effect is mostly water vapor is because water vapor warms the atmosphere most in the coldest, driest regions, which would be the north, that is the high latitudes. And that is exactly what we see, that the warming is occurring mostly in the north. Now, carbon dioxide, would it preferentially warm at any particular latitude?
I'm not very up to what carbon
dioxide. I don't think so.
Let me ask you this question. How come Antarctica isn't warming as much? Well, does that blow my idea out of the water? No. You know why? What did I just tell you? We are distorted. we are distorted. Everything is up to the north. Antarctica is a continent. The Arctic is an ocean. Very different situation there. This idea, the Arctic's going to melt and our cities are going to flood. No, it's not. Even if the Arctic melted, it's only an ice cube. Put ice cubes in a water, you melt them all, that's still the same level. See, I was anticipating, it's just like the sea level rise. Sea level's rising, right? They're rising 8 inches per 8 inches per century or whatever the heck it is. You can adapt to that. But it takes a greater amount of melting of the land-based glaciers to produce the same rise now than it did in the 1800s. Why is that? Because if you're starting eight inches higher, the volume of water is greater. So you need to continue to increase the rate of melting, and that's not happening either. So the sea level rise, it's Le Chatelier's principle. Everything adapts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let me ask this then, because you hear all the time, we have to do something about climate change. So then what, if anything, would you say should be done?
Nothing. Adapt the way with there's four times as many people living on the planet today as 1930, with 1/28 the amount of deaths. The GDP, the global GDP, is at record high levels, despite the fact whatever they're trying to do to stop it in the United States and in the Western Hemisphere. All right, listen, man has done this all the time, except now it's on a grand scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted to switch topics. We got about 7 minutes to go. You are a bodybuilding champion. Now, can you tell us about the contest you entered last week? I think it was the Arnold Classic. Is that right?
Yeah, it was the amateur division of the Arnold Classic over in Columbus. I made a covenant with God when COVID came along to try to do something that I know I could not have done unless I had God's help. There are many things in your life you look back at and say, well, I had angels on my shoulders, angels around me, I had good Lord, but you don't realize it at the time. So you give yourself the credit when, and as you get older, you start saying, well, wait a minute. If I had to go through that, I don't know how I got through that, how that turned this way. I look at all the times I've almost died, and somehow or the other, we were coming back from Texas, for instance, and driving 70 miles an hour, had a blowout. One time a deer hit my car at 70 miles an hour. If it hit under the wheels, we're in the woods someplace dead.
Yeah.
My whole family, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that if you're focused on God, all right, if you can get close to God, then his wind's at your back. And the only reason I'm alive today is because of his grace and his mercy, and that he wants me to do something, all right? So it's not about me. See, so I think about that. So I said, okay. Well, when COVID came along, I knew what was going to happen. Everybody's going, oh, right? I'm going to go train. You know, fear and faith have in common their belief in a future event, but one believes in the possibilities. Faith, if you have faith, you believe in possibilities. If you have fear, you believe in the problem, right? So what I said was, guys are going to quit training. I'm just going to double down and train harder, right?
Yeah.
And go on this the exact opposite way. So I forget who mailed me something and said, hey, you know, you've had, and they don't even count. I don't do steroids, but I'll compete in contests. Now the only place to compete is a non-tested contest. But what I did was, 40 placings, and I was ranked 40th in the world as far as all the bodybuilders have ever competed.
Wow. Said,
and the
good
number
for you. That's amazing.
Good for you.
The number one guy was Charles Glass, who was a tremendous bodybuilder. He had 118 placings. Well, I have 106 right now. And when I made that covenant with God, and now I'm like fourth or fifth or whatever, I made that covenant. I said it so. Every contest, my 70th birthday, the Nationals in Pittsburgh, the over 70, I'm going to try to get that record, right? Hey, look, when you're training at 68, you still have to train hard. Mm-hmm. You can't train like, oh, well, I'm 68, give me a 5-pound dumbbell. Your muscles are just going to shrink, right?
Yeah.
And, my mom and dad died. We've had a lot of issues. I had to go back and forth to Rhode Island 11 times, settle the estate. It was just a bunch of things that came up. And I can tell that it's not God putting the problems in the way, but the problems that do get in the way keep me closer to God. Even this last winter, I mean, this is an embarrassing forecast on my part, but I got to believe it's taught me a lesson that will lead to something bigger down the road. And, you know, winter's not done yet either.
Because, you know, so many people around our age, I'm 70 and you're just a couple of years younger. Todd's really a lot younger. But a lot of people think that when you get to our age, we don't lift heavy anymore. So, you know, I'm not doing heavy bench press. I guess I'm doing like 90 pounds or something, which for me, yeah, it's good exercise. But do you think that we should be doing heavy at our age?
Well, what I do is I change rep time, change rest speed. For instance, I try to base all my sets around the number 7 because I stole that from two guys that were Olympians, Ben and John Peterson, and they had this 7-7-7 routine. They started Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and they believe it will continually remind you, since 7-7-7 is like God's number, of, you know, why you're training, right? So I try, but I do variations. Like, I always try to – this is all the drug-free bodybuilding ideas, is create fight or flight, and that'll release growth hormone. Problem is, when you get older, there's not the same amount of growth hormone available. I trained a guy named Kerry McCoy, who was our Olympian in 2000 at heavyweight. He was 218 when he was training with me, started. He was 262 by the time he went to Sydney, right?
Oh, now, hopefully that was muscle.
Oh, it was muscle, all right. In fact, they started testing him left and right. They couldn't figure out how he gained so much muscle. Well, a guy never squatted before, right? He never did.
Yeah.
So we just went wild on that. I doubled his protein intake, doubled his water intake. It was like shooting fish in a barrel with a guy with the genetics he had. But what happened was I decided, well, I'll take a year off from competition and just train with him. I gained 6 real pounds of muscle, and in 19 and when I was 47 and 48, I was almost unbeatable. I mean, I won the NGA Nationals. I won all a bunch of things, and people, what the heck? Where did this guy come from, right? And so, the gate is narrow, right? You have to focus. You have to focus harder. The more advanced you get in anything, the more you have to focus. If your idea is to try to find the right answer. All right.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I have a book here by Dick Van Dyke, who's in his mid-90s, and it's called Keep Moving. He says, if all you can do is walk around the block, walk around the block. Yes. You know, you got to do what you can do. And he goes to the weight room and is, I don't know, 97 years old, and he's still going to the weight room. So obviously you think we shouldn't stop. We should just keep doing it, just whatever we can do.
Yeah. Well, you weren't put here to sit still, so I don't think.
Yeah. Before, well, you remember Dr. Jay Lair, who was my co-host?
Oh,
he was an Ironman triathlon guy.
I can't even believe that he's gone. I mean, that rattled the daylights out of me. That's why I never would take put needles in me. My father always used to say anything that it fools your body is going to cause problems. He would always tell me that when I was younger. And, you know, you look at the Amish community, had virtually no COVID. They have no autism, all right? They don't have birth defects in the Amish community, right, that we know about. And what's the common denominator? No Amish women are on the pill, and no Amish are getting vaccines. And I'm not saying, you know, I like RFK's stance on the vaccine. You know, the old vaccines, you put in the old, an old dead cell, that's one thing. But when you're putting in something that is literally fooling your body into thinking it has something to produce the antidotes, what makes you think that it's not going to produce the other reactions in a range of circumstances? So if you're a perfectly healthy person, you stay the heck away with it. I had 2 chapters in my book about that whole thing. And how the COVID thing was a warm up for what's going to be the climate.
We should wrap up in a minute, but can you say just a little about that? That's really important.
Well, I wrote the book in April 2020 is when I wrote the bulk of the book. And what happened was I said, well, I saw what was going on with COVID. I said, they're going to be doing this with climate down the road, you know, and it's part of a warm up. And what was astounding was how the young people simply bent over and took it. Just they did and they're still walking around with masks and all this stuff, you know. And again, you know, my minister, my church, Pastor Zach, said, listen, if you ever notice in the Bible there weren't a lot of sick people around Jesus, and the sick people that were, they weren't sick after they touched them and hung out with them, right?
So yeah,
it comes down to faith or fear, all right?
Yeah.
Listen, I love what's his name? Stonewall Jackson. You know, you're not supposed to say you love a Southern general because of the Civil War, but he used to get out in front of the Yankee army, get about a half mile away, put his hand up and start praying before the battle. And the Yankees, the Yankee snipers were trying to take him out, right? And he was calm as the day is long. And he says, his troops looked at him and they couldn't believe it. And he said, I'm not living a second beyond what God wants me to live. And I'm not dying a second before. And that's the kind of faith that I wish I had. I mean, I still get nervous about stuff. But what's the only way that you can have that faith is to have the focus on God. Constant gratitude. Constant gratitude for even the chance. Look, we're all talking today. We've never, I don't remember meeting any of you personally, but if we're like we're friends or something, hanging out.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I was at your talk where you had Donald Trump call in. Remember?
You know, there are a lot of people pissed off.
Yeah, actually, for fun, and we got to wrap up now, unfortunately. But for fun, I'll put the link under the podcast of when Donald Trump called Joe Bastardi in the middle of a major presentation. People get a kick out of that.
Yeah, and it's like there were a lot of people that were mad at that. And I was like, what is your problem? You know, there are too many fuddy-duddies in science.
Yeah. Well, we got to wrap up now. This has been Joe Bastardi, Pennsylvania-based meteorologist who's chief a forecaster for WeatherBell. Okay, so thanks so much for being on the show, Joe.
Okay, bulk up or leave town and enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got. God bless you.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, this is Tom Harrison, my co-host Todd Royal, signing out from the other side of the story.